You know, when I was right as I was getting into your book, just by staring at the cover and, of course, the headline, The Men Who Stare at Goats, I looked at that and went, what is this all about?
Right.
Tell me about the cover and in the headline of this book.
Okay, well, the cover, I suppose, is slightly factually wrong, because the cover is a goat with a whole lot of guns pointing at it. Now, at no stage, I think, did they actually point guns at goats, because what they did do, and this was at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, was that they had 30 goats in a place called Goat Lab. Now, the goats were there anyway. They were there for kind of traditional special forces training programs, that they'd throw a hand grenade into a room full of goats, and then they'd rush in and nurse the goats back to health. This was Goat Lab. Goat Lab used to be called Dog Lab, but then they decided that they really didn't want to do that stuff to dogs, so they switched to goats. So they had all these goats on base anyway, and in the early 1980s, they decided, we've got all these goats, let's see if we can try and kill them just by staring at them. So they set off on a mission to try and find a man who could stare a goat to death. And they found him. Well,
they did find him.
Well, possibly, anyway. I mean, it's kind of inconclusive whether he managed to actually kill a goat just by staring at it. But they found a man called Guy Savelli, who now runs a dance and martial arts studio in Ohio. And I found Guy as well. And they flew Guy in. Now, at one point, they had Guy in one room, and then they had all these goats, 30 goats, in another room. And Guy had them put numbers on each of the goats, 1 to 30. And Guy was staring at goat number 16, and apparently goat number 17 fell over. So I guess that's collateral damage. I'm sorry, George.
This is a bizarre story, John.
Yeah. I wouldn't have believed it myself if I hadn't chanced upon it. That isn't the only goat staring experiment that they did. They had them staring directly at goats. I mean, I obviously thought if they were, you know, throwing hand grenades in and operating on them, then maybe the goats were in a kind of shaky medical condition to begin with, and, you know, they just fell over because of that. But it turns out, no, it turns out that they always used healthy goats.
So was the plan to create some people who, let's say, could go to some function, and let's say the then Soviet head of the Politburo was there, and you'd sit back and stare at him and hope that he'd keel over and die? Was that what they wanted to do?
Well, I'm sure that some of the people involved had that in mind, but one of the main guys, General Stubblebine, who was the first person who flew to Fort Bragg and suggested that they try to kill goats just by staring at them. He says, no, it's just like, it's kind of like remote, well, it's what they call remote influencing, isn't it? It's like one stage on from remote viewing. And his basic idea was, if you could do that with your mind, what else could you do? And General Stubblebine's philosophy, which I think is a very good philosophy, is that the U.S. Army has a debt to trying out this stuff, because if they don't try this stuff out, who would? And you know, the U.S. military does have a glorious history of trying out crazy, madcap things, some of which work. The high visibility jacket probably wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the U.S. military. So, you know, so it came from a honorable place, and also a good-hearted place. This all sprung from the post-Vietnam funk. You know, I think it wasn't just individual soldiers who were suffering from post-combat depression. I think the entire military as a machine was traumatized in the years after Vietnam. And it was in this funk that they began looking to these new age human potential ideas, with the basic philosophy that if the American soldier could learn how to do this stuff, you know, walk through their walls and become invisible and kill things just by staring at them, nobody's going to want to screw around with an army that can do that. And so that's where they try. You know, a superpower needs superpowers.
Yeah,
so that's where they try to do all this stuff. That's
well,
how it all began.
How successful were they in trying to walk through walls or to become invisible, for granted?
I think walking through walls was really unsuccessful. General Stubblebine spent you know, some time as commander of military intelligence in the early 1980s. He had 16,000 soldiers under his command and an office in Arlington, Virginia. And he spent, you know, he spent quite a lot of time, you know, standing up from behind his desk, thinking to himself, what is the atom mostly made up of? Space. What am I mostly made up of? Atoms. All I need to do is merge the spaces.
Merge them.
So he'd step out from behind his desk. I mean, to me, by the way, George, the key word in this is mostly, that the atom is made up mostly of space. It's not entirely made up of space. But anyway. Well,
John, did he have a staff of physicists working with him, or was he just concocting these things by himself?
Well, that one in particular seemed to be basically his own idea, but it was inspired by a manual called the First Earth Battalion Manual, which I think we should talk about in a bit. No, he was a kind of lone in the wall walking, in his wall walking. He was kind of a lone wolf. Although I believe that other soldiers also tried to walk through their walls. But he would get out from behind his desk and he would, you know, walk towards the wall, and he'd be thinking, you know, all I need to do is merge the spaces. What is destiny? Am I destined to stay in this room? Of course I'm not. And then he'd bump his nose on.
And bang, he'd break his nose or something like that.
Yeah, well, he that was one of his worries, actually, was you know, if he continued to fail to walk through his wall, you know, would there be bruising on his nose? But luckily, and, you know, would people in his office spot this? But luckily, he was going through a messy divorce at the time, and he said to me that, you know, maybe if he turned up all bruised, people would think it was just domestic abuse. Because no one would think, you know, well, what else could it be?
John, is he still alive?
Oh yes. I met him twice and had phone conversations with him as well.
Still in the military, or is he retired?
No. He was kind of forced into early retirement in the early in 1983. I think he left the military, but he was very high up. He was a much respected 2-star general in charge of Army intelligence at Arlington. So all of the signals intelligence, satellite technology, intelligence technology. He would have been in charge of prisoner of war intelligence, but there were no prisoners of war in the early 1980s. And the reason why he was forced into, or a reason why he was forced into early retirement, was because General Wickham, who was the chief of staff of the Army at the time, was you know, quite a serious Christian, and he came to believe that some of General Stubblebine's ideas, like, you know, spoon bending and so on, and wall walking, if he'd known about
too, it, too demonic, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, it was the work of Satan, and which to me, you know, as a kind of secular guy living in London, sounds kind of just as nuts.